I pronounce my own name as Ian.
Yeah.
Ian. Spelled I-A-N, but pronunciation is almost as if it were E-I-N. Ian.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, so Ian, you have listened to some my records. Now I want you to answer a few questions about your background, market, your education, people with whom you have engaged, etc. So, you, at what stage you have decided to become a mathematician?
Yes, it was essentially when I decided not to become a physicist. When I began collegial studies at McGill, I had made no firm decision, except that I was certainly interested in both mathematics and physics, based on my experiences in high school. But at McGill there was a, at least when I went, between 1970 and 75, there was a an intense rivalry, in fact almost a feud, between the physics and mathematics department. And they seemed to make life difficult for each other. Rather than somehow cooperating and having joint programs and such things, they always seemed to get in each other's way. Physicists constantly complaining that mathematicians weren't teaching the students what they needed. And it was rather unpleasant to try to do both physics and mathematics jointly together. Certainly each had such enormous number of courses that one would have to take. One would almost have to spend almost an extra year or two just to fulfill the basic requirements. The requirements were so heavy. So the atmosphere wasn't very good to do both math and physics. It became evident that one would have to make a choice. And I eventually became frustrated with the lack of rigor in the physics. And I guess it something very critical happened after my very first year at McGill. I started taking some courses in the summer, which immediately somehow accelerated my progress in mathematics, at least not progress in the sense of learning, but in my route through the program, so that I started taking third year courses in second year, and it started accelerating this way. And of course, the higher up you get, the more rigor you're confronted with, and it becomes more demanding.
My impression is, yes, please, go ahead.
At any rate, this only accelerated my distaste for the absence of rigor in the physics courses, the way they did things so sloppily, that I eventually just cast physics aside. Unfortunately, it certainly had a negative effect on my background, not having tried to pursue physics for a longer time, but I cast it aside and then just pursued mathematics.
My impression is that undergraduate education in Canada, especially in McGill, is much better than in this country. At least I had some students from there, and they were prepared better at the beginning. Afterwards, this is not so important.
No.
But at the beginning.
Certainly, well, one is prepared, very well prepared technically. You're not. You're not exposed to unimportant things. Be they easy or hard, if they're important, you're exposed to those concepts, and one has to struggle with them. It's essentially only a three-year program, and it's tough.
You have not there this general education right here, as 2 years students are obliged to take Greek philosophy and all kinds of things.
It's separated out. It's in another institution, in fact. But this is particular to the province of Quebec, that in between high school and university, there is another sort of a collegial level, which lasts 2 years.
And you cannot enter
no.
the university direct?
No.
What age people do you really are needed?
I suppose 20. But when I went, there weren't enough of these, they're called CEGEPs. I forget what each letter is, CEGEP. I forget exactly what it stands for. But they also have professional programs there as well, not just academic programs. And at the time I went to McGill, McGill was operating one of them, one of these CEGEPs. And so it was possible to take university courses while you were still there, because physically you were on the campus. And so I started taking. And anyway, by the time I was in the last undergraduate year, I think I was taking only graduate courses, practically.
I know well only one person missing there, John Taylor. Do you know?
I know who he is now, but I had no contact with him as a student. As a student, I had a lot of contact with Carl Hertz.
I met him, I suppose. Was he some time in Italy?
Yes, he was.
He has mentioned that he lived just a few 100 yards from this place.
I suppose the two people who had the strongest influence on me at McGill were Hertz and Choksi, who works in ergodic theory.
And how have you chosen your graduate school? What is the procedure in Canada?
Oh, well, it wasn't a very... I simply applied to several places and picked one that was not too far from home, that had some people of...
Did you know anybody there?
I knew Dawson was there, in Chirgo.
What was the source of your information about Dawson?
Well, he used to be at McGill. He had a position at McGill and decided to leave for personal reasons.
So you knew him personally?
No, I mean, he left almost the same time that I came to McGill. But in talking with some of my professors at McGill, so there were a few people that were respected in analysis that were at Carleton, and it was fairly close.
The system of graduate education in Canada and the United States are almost identical, or are they different?
Not really. It's quite standard. There's 2 degrees in Canada, and that's standard. There's a master's degree and then the PhD. And in the master's degree can serve several purposes. It can be used to round out one's education.
But in mathematics, for example, here it is rather rare.
It's rather rare in the United States, but not in Canada. It's the rule rather than the exception. And
after 3 years,
even a year could take only. For me, it took only a year, or maybe a year and one term, and. It allows one to broaden one's base before one chooses to specialize in one's field. I happen to have a slightly weak background in algebra. I took a disliking to algebra as an undergraduate. But while at Carleton, I did some studies with a fellow named Delab. And he at least kindled a little bit of interest in the subject. But it was in the subject as something being alive rather than just studying some theory that's 100 years old. So I raised my level in algebra a little bit during this time. And I also wrote a small thesis, which was of a good practical value, just practice in writing. So that when I came to write my doctoral thesis, it wasn't such a labor. I'd already had some practice. In addition, I had defended the master's thesis. So one also has some exposure at being given an oral exam. It's a little less traumatic later on. It has a lot of positive features.
And for how long time have you worked as a graduate student with Dawson?
With Dawson, it was barely a year, maybe just a little bit more. Originally, I was working in more analytical things. In particular, I was working on the Boltzmann equation, but it defeated me. And being a little frustrated, I decided to somehow switch areas, but not completely. And so at that point, I had completed all my coursework, of course, and there was only a thesis to write. And so I knocked on Dawson's door and asked if he had any interesting problems that were connected with differential equations, perhaps, or something. And
what did he suggest?
And he suggested working on the measure-valued diffusions.
Of course, what was main, I suppose.
He suggested it because it
breakthrough was considering the additive functionals of these measure-valued processes, which are very suitable tool for investigating them. Was this a suggestion of Dawson?
Yes. He was interested originally. He had some results about extinction and probability, and he suspected that there might be some almost sure phenomenon, and this was the original motivation for studying these additive functionals, to be able to get almost sure results.
But it is obvious, of course, both, of course, Dawson and partially you have no background in Markov processes, more or less.
In general theory?
Yes. No, anyway, for example, these additive functionals that you consider, of course, it's the nature of the considered random measures. And not to consider just the law in distribution, convergence in distribution, which you have done. If you would read anything about it. You starting from Volkonsky and Meyer in, late 50s and the early 60s. The beautiful theory of the additive functions.
Well, I can't speak for Dawson, of course.
You can, no. But that's all you can say about yourself.
For myself, certainly. No, I didn't.
You came this concept absolutely independently of all previous.
Yes.
Okay, now after you defended your thesis, you went to Wisconsin.
Actually, Dawson was on sabbatical. For a good portion of the time when I was working on the various problems. And at some point I had gone down just for a month or two, no, actually 3 months, to Madison just to finish up things, to show him what I had done. He had some suggestions on how to polish things off, just at the end. And I completed the thesis a few days before Christmas in 1980. It was in the middle of the year, it was extremely awkward. I didn't want to lose 4, 5, 6 months, because if I would start writing letters and thinking about where could I do a postdoctoral fellowship, I could lose a lot of time. I had already been in Madison for a few months. I knew the people. And so I just made a quick decision and made an arrangement to stay there. I had already had a fellowship from the National Research Council. I had known that I had it even before I started writing my thesis. So there was some monetary incentive to work hard, work fast.
So you didn't need special support from medicine?
No, I didn't have any support from medicine. While I was there, I slowly but surely got introduced to large deviation theory. I attended one of these Midwest colloquium they have every, I think it's in October, at Northwestern University. At that time, in fact, you were there at that time. It was Vardhan, John Walsh, and you were there at that time as well. And I heard for the first time an exposition about large deviations. And it took a few years for things to sink in, what all of this was about. But while I was at Madison, I worked with Peter Ney. And
And what's up?
on large deviations, the sharper forms, not the logarithmic type results. And in fact, we considered something close to additive functionals. So we considered large deviations for processes which were pairs. The pair was to be Markov, the first component Markov, and the second one was an additive.
Yes, of course.
Yes.
One of
So
approaches.
it was called Markov additive process. So I did have indirectly some experience with these things.